As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is going to be one of the hardest videos I have ever had to make. On the one hand, Ukraine is currently and involuntarily embroiled in a conflict that is one of the clearest examples of good versus evil in the past century. I want to be able to tell you a story of how Ukraine cast off its Soviet-era shackles and is becoming a strong and efficient first world economy. Unfortunately, I can't, because it's simply not true. Before the second Russian invasion of 2022, and even before the first invasion of Crimea in 2014, Ukraine was the poorest country in all of Europe. There were many reasons for this, many of which were internal failings, and many others were external pressures beyond the country's control. The sad reality is that a lot of these pressures were coming from Moscow even before these more blatant acts of aggression. Wherever the finger of blame is pointed, it all means the same thing, though. The country, and more importantly its people, were vulnerable before being invaded. Don't get me wrong, I love hearing reports of Ukraine's victories over the belligerent Russians. But sometimes we can be distracted by this and fooled into thinking that good is bound to win out over evil. The reality is that, like most wars, there will be no winners here. Russia has basically turned the entire world against it, and what few friends it has left are not willing to jeopardise their global standings to help them out. The rest of the world, particularly Europe, is going to struggle through further disruptions to energy and food supplies, and Ukraine, well, Ukraine will be left dealing with the scars of this war for generations after the last bullet has been fired. So, how was the economy of Ukraine going before the events of 2014 and 2022? And what will this conflict mean for the country, and more importantly its people, in the years to come? Once we've answered these questions, we can, as always, put Ukraine on the Economics Explained national leaderboard. The economy of Ukraine as it exists today started, like many others in this region, in 1991, when they established independence from the failing Soviet Union. While on the surface this was a necessary step in the right direction, it still caused massive problems within the country itself. Last month we explored what the end of the Soviet Union meant for Russia, and we found that workers, factories, and entire supply chains had no idea what they were meant to do. All of these systems were historically supposed to be run by a central authority, and with that gone, these delicate systems just fell apart. Well, all of that was many times worse than the satellite states of the Union. Russia had the benefit of being relatively self-sufficient, but a majority of the Ukrainian economy under the Soviet system relied on producing things for the Union and then having the Union supply them with whatever they needed in return. It wasn't just industrial and agricultural output that was hurt either. Starting an economy effectively from scratch is difficult, and one of the biggest hurdles is setting up the financial infrastructure needed to facilitate proper business and trade. Ukraine in the early 90s had no access to international financial markets because existing banks from around the world were understandably apprehensive about setting up systems with a country that had zero experience with modern banking. Not having access to financial markets means that even if a country has strong agricultural or industrial potential or a wealth of natural resources, like Ukraine has, it all means very little because the country can't get the investment needed to tap those resources, and it couldn't sell them effectively even if they could. The government attempted to alleviate these issues through massive spending funded by their own monetary expansion. And if you've watched this channel for long enough, you probably know what happens when industrial output falls rapidly and the government tries to fix the problem by printing lots of money. By 1996, the inflation rate was over 500%, and the government was forced to introduce a new currency, which it pledged to keep stable in relation to the US dollar. This, unfortunately, was more or less a futile effort, because Ukraine was still very much reliant on Russia, and Russia was not doing much better at this point. The human cost of this economic situation is that during the 90s, absolute poverty affected as much as 54% of the population. Fortunately, by the 2000s, this was starting to turn around. The country had had enough time to start to integrate with the rest of the world, and it was able to start exporting natural resources and food to Europe and beyond. Its new, more stable currency also allowed it to receive international investment And it benefited from low energy prices because it was able to access natural gas coming directly from Russia. By 2007, just 8 years after the Russian financial crisis, the country had eliminated absolute poverty amongst its citizens, and it was one of the fastest growing economies in all of Europe, although still the poorest. Unfortunately, the 2008 global financial crisis hit the developing country particularly hard. Its banks and financial institutions were not yet sophisticated enough to be directly impacted by the financial system that caused problems in America and Europe, but it was, in a way, collateral damage. Ukraine in 2008 was still heavily dependent on foreign investment and materials exports. During downturns, investors are far less likely to put their money into risky ventures in unproven countries, and they will often look to remove any money that they have in places like Ukraine to shore up their financial positions at home. This capital exodus and reduced trade meant that the economy shrunk by over 30% in the following year, a devastating blow to any economy, but particularly one that was developing so rapidly. The bad thing about building an economy off of exporting natural resources is that when demand for those resources drops, like, say, in a global economic meltdown, then so too does the economy, regardless of how well managed anything else is. The good thing about building an economy off exporting natural resources is that when demand for those resources rises, the economy benefits directly from it. In the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, China underwent a massive stimulus effort that centered around building infrastructure. Infrastructure spending is a great way to get an economy going again, with the added benefit of getting stuff in place to make an economy even more efficient in the future. China embraced infrastructure spending so much that it became one of the rare economies to overdo it in certain sectors. But the reason that this was important to Ukraine was that roads and bridges and rail lines all take a lot of natural resources to construct. Natural resources that were provided, in part, by Ukraine. If you look at Ukraine's GDP and the historical prices of the natural resources it exports, you will see a very strong correlation. Of course, this resource-fueled recovery did not last long because in 2014, the country was once again plunged into economic uncertainty with the first Russian invasion. The invasion of Crimea in 2014 presented a number of very serious problems to Ukraine. Beyond the obvious of being invaded by a belligerent nuclear superpower, one of the biggest issues was that the foreign investment that the country was using to grow was once again scared out of the nation. Just the same as investors are worried about investing into a small developing country during an economic downturn, they are also, understandably, worried about investing into a nation that is actively being invaded. The invasion also came at a particularly terrible time for the economy. Not that there is ever a good time to be invaded, but the Ukrainian National Bank had just floated the nation's currency a month earlier. This was the same currency that from 1996 to 2014 was pegged to the US dollar. Well, the newly floating currency lost over 70% of its value in the months following the invasion, which signalled to any outsiders that were still considering doing business in Ukraine that it simply wasn't worth it. Through no fault of their own, they had simply become too risky. There were the more obvious issues as well. Crimea and the Donbass regions of Ukraine were relatively productive population centres. By invading these regions, Russia denied Ukraine the economic productivity that came from these areas. This went beyond just drawing a line in the sand as well. Most larger businesses don't operate exclusively within one location. Any business that had any part of their operations in the immediately affected areas had to work around the fact that they may have just lost a factory, office, warehouse, or administrative centre. Think about how much work gets done in your office if the email goes offline, and then imagine how hard it would be to get stuff done if half of your company's operations woke up under the occupation of a foreign power. On top of this all, Ukraine lost its largest trading partner and its primary energy supplier. Once again, just as things were starting to go well for the country, its GDP more than halved in the 2 years that followed. The international community was there behind them to provide assistance, but it wasn't as intense as you would expect because of the next big issue plaguing the Ukrainian economy, and that is corruption.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
So this will be the hard part of the video because corruption is, of course, a dirty word that distracts from the narrative in all of our minds about the current war in Ukraine being between a hostile Goliath and a virtuous David. And don't get me wrong, it absolutely is. Again, it's one of the most clear-cut examples of good versus evil we've seen in decades. It's just that David has been known to take a bribe or two. Understanding corruption is crucial to understanding the economy of Ukraine as it exists today. Ignoring the corruption will also be detrimental to formulating an effective strategy to rebuild the economy when this invasion draws to a close. So by now you have probably pieced together that Ukraine is a very corrupt country. Multiple reports have listed it as the most corrupt country in Europe, and international surveys place it in line with other countries like Brazil and Colombia. The next most important thing to understand is the type of corruption. On a macroeconomic level, there are two broad categories of corruption to look at: corruption of theft and corruption of influence. Influence corruption is when an individual or a business will pay a bribe to get something from the government. This can be as small as an individual paying an inspections officer a few dollars to give their car a roadworthy certificate, or it can be as big as millions of dollars changing hands to influence policymakers to vote one way or another on a particular law. Influence corruption is obviously bad, but it doesn't always do that much harm to an economy. In fact, some businesses prefer to operate in an environment where red tape can be avoided for a small fee. Corruption in the form of theft is much more damaging, though. This is where government officials will either shake down businesses for money or outright embezzle public funds and funnel them through businesses of their friends for a healthy kickback. This is the type of corruption that has truly hurt Ukraine. Former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych once estimated with his cabinet that corruption was costing the Ukrainian economy almost $10 billion per year, a very significant figure in a country with a GDP of only $155 billion. This was also pretty ironic given that Yanukovych was later embroiled in a slew of corruption scandals himself, but that's just par for the course in Ukraine. After the 2014 invasion of Crimea, the International Monetary Fund wanted to loan Ukraine $17.5 billion, but only $6.7 billion was ever paid out because the Ukrainian government was unable to pass legislation that would offer the IMF confidence that this money wouldn't just get stolen by government officials. This kind of corruption also hurts Ukraine in other ways. At the moment, the country enjoys visa-free travel to the European Union, something that is very important both from an economic and quality of life point of view. If the problem of corruption continues, this privilege could be revoked because EU countries don't want to be safe havens for corrupt officials. At the moment, foreign aid entering Ukraine is primarily coming in the form of humanitarian supplies and military equipment. But to become a regular functioning economy once this is all over, Ukraine is going to need outside help, and outsiders are going to need to know that this money won't just get stolen. I want to quickly mention that Polymatter also did a great video recently on corruption in China, and he highlighted a lot of the same issues that we did here for Ukraine. If you are interested in a more in-depth exploration of this issue of corruption, you should go check out that video as well. I do want to end this on a positive note, which is that President Zelensky has seemingly been a champion for anti-corruption measures in the government. Of course, those efforts will now be delayed due to more pressing issues, and it's also worth mentioning that most Ukrainian presidents spoke a big game in opposition to corruption while actively participating in it themselves, so make of that what you will. I will give my standard disclaimer, which is that nobody can predict the future, least of all economists. But the road to recovery for Ukraine is going to be hard. A history of corruption means that any foreign aid is going to need strict oversight, and two military invasions within a decade means that businesses won't set up operations there unless they literally have no other options. Now, the unprecedented level of foreign support may help, but it won't last forever, and you can't run an economy on foreign aid. Potential tourists, investors, businesses, and trading partners are all inevitably going to be thinking of a Russian invasion when considering doing business in Ukraine. And unfortunately, that is going to hurt their people for a long time after this war is over. Now it's time to put Ukraine on the Economics Explained National Leaderboard. Starting as always with size, Ukraine has a GDP of $155 billion, which is well behind most other European nations, but it's still in the top third of countries worldwide, and it gets a 5 out of 10. GDP per capita is bad, at $3,726 per person as of 2020. This makes it the poorest country in Europe and puts it in line with other countries like Sudan, Egypt, and the Philippines. It gets a 3 out of 10. Stability and confidence is also unfortunately not good. Since 1991, the country has gone through two currencies, four significant downturns, two invasions, and a slew of corruption issues. While not all of this was their fault, the country itself can't get more than a 1 out of 10. Growth is an interesting one. In the brief periods between disasters, Ukraine has shown that it can grow its economy rapidly. After 2008 and before 2014, it was growing its GDP by as much as 20% per year. But this score is based off a 10-year time horizon, and since the early 2010s, Ukraine has not really grown at all. It gets a 2 out of 10 for now, with the exception that this figure could be a lot worse if we were to include growth figures for 2022, which will undoubtedly be heavily in the negatives. Finally, industry. Ukraine's output is primarily comprised of natural resource exports and agriculture. Genuine value-adding industries haven't really been able to take a foothold in the country because there are just so many better options around that part of the world if you want to set up manufacturing facilities. The portion of the country's GDP that comes from actually making stuff has only declined since leaving the Soviet Union. It gets a 2 out of 10. Altogether, this gives Ukraine an average score of 2.6 out of 10, which puts it at the bottom of the leaderboard. Now, I know some people will be angry about this. Believe me, I wanted to put it higher. And bearing in mind the circumstances, I was considering not doing this part of the video at all. But I left it in because I think it shows something very important. Ukraine is not a wealthy country. It's a country that has been repeatedly denied the opportunity to do better for itself and its citizens by a string of circumstances, mostly outside of its control. Just because we want to believe that this country is taking the Russian invasion in its stride does not mean it's true. Its people are vulnerable and they are suffering. Understanding the cold, hard economic realities of what is going on in this part of the world might not raise the spirits like stories of Ukrainian forces sinking Russian flagships or holding off tank columns, but it's probably more important to hear. I will admit myself that I have been swept up in the vitriol of putting Putin in his place, but despite the coverage and live updates, this isn't a sport where the appropriate response is cheering for one team or another. This is a war of aggression, and there won't be any winners.